Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting a television show or season that we think you'll find interesting. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the second season of Good Omens. Now, this is based on a book that I've never read. We did watch the first season of this and recorded on that 3 years ago. So it's been a little bit between seasons, but they did a good job keeping it reasonably accessible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't remember all the details of the first season, but I never really felt confused or anything. And the two leads, David Tennant and Michael Sheen, they're such fun to watch, and they play so well off each other.
They really do.
I mean, this is kind of, sort of, spiritually, I mean that in more ways than one, a buddy cop film, except they're not cops. One's an angel, one's a demon, both have kind of fallen from favor of their respective camps, and they're kind of forming their own, I don't say neutral party, but go-between party at times. And this is another one where, you know, the fate of the world rests in the balance of what these two can do. And it's just, it's fun to watch.
Well, at one point when we were watching, you referred to it as the odd couple with a lot of religion thrown in.
Yes. Yes. Because Aziraphale is kind of the Felix character. The, I don't say the neat and tidy, prissy one, but kind of. And certainly, Crowley is not the slob or anything, but he's a let-things-go-the-way-they-go kind of deal.
Aziraphale shelves his books. Crowley walks around with a stack of books, and when he can't figure out where to put them down, he just chucks them to the side and lets them fall.
When Crowley was taking care of the bookstore and he came down the stairs with a pile of books, I'm like, why? What is he even doing with these?
I know, right?
And then it gets to where, yeah, something else comes up, and he literally just takes the whole stack and just chucks them over his shoulder.
And all I could think was those poor books.
I think they were stunt books.
Yes, yes.
Otherwise, we would have heard a very loud thunk when they landed.
That's true. I think they have stunt mat to land on. You're right.
Well, I actually think they were fake books because they seemed to stay together when they got hurled.
Oh, that's funny.
They made wonderful use of the bookshop. And there was a bit where I was wondering, where did they find this filming location?
Yeah.
But then it got to the point where there's the showdown outside the bookstore.
And I decided it must be a back lot.
I decided they built the whole thing on a soundstage.
Oh, and that could be.
You know, a big soundstage, yeah. Potentially hangar warehouse type size thing. Because they've got a few cars they drive through or whatever. But everything is taking place within, really at an intersection and a few doors down.
Yeah.
And that's about it. And they do a really good job of building up the community for that area, the geography of that area.
I found it hilarious when they had the meeting of the shopkeepers on the street, and one lady was describing her seamstress business.
Yes. We'd met her at the coffee shop. The implication was it was a brothel, but when it came time to actually spell it out, they were within the Angel's bookstore.
Yes.
Well, certain words just aren't going to get used.
Yes.
They did such a great job, though, with establishing a clear geometry of that bookstore and layout of it. But then when it came time for that meeting of the store association and whatnot, he's literally rearranging it. And it's like, yep, this is different, but it still works. It still fits in the space, even though it can't.
Yeah, yeah.
And almost a TARDIS-esque aspect of that.
Yes.
And, of course, Tennant is not one, but two of the Doctors on Doctor Who. And there was another reference to Doctor Who. And I appreciated that they had it, but didn't harp on it.
Yes.
He didn't even seem to react to it at all. And there were one or two other times where there could have been a, it's bigger on the inside, like when they're going in the elevator up to heaven and such. And Tennant, you know, I first encountered him in Doctor Who. We've seen him on Jessica Jones, first season of this. He's done plenty of stuff. He is a terrific actor. But also one that I look at him and I see Tennant, as well as the character.
Here he's over the top in a really good way.
Mm-hmm.
The red hair drives me crazy.
I loved how when they're doing flashbacks to other eras, his hairstyle radically changes.
Yes. Well, I loved when he went to heaven and was trying to blend in. His hairstyle changed. And even his tattoo changed.
His tattoo changed, his face tattoo, his attire, and it's like he's trying to fit in, but he's still him.
Yes, yes. But no, the red for his hair is, honestly, it looks like it's out of a comic book. And by that, I mean the color is so artificial.
It's not red as in red hair color, it's red as in Coca-Cola red.
Yes. To me, it's red as in artist's rendering red. As in, red you would normally see on a hair color.
But his body language is so different than, say, the Doctor and stuff like that. And a lot of that is, it fits the character. It's like, I think that's how that kind of guy would act.
Yeah.
And I love how he's a demon doing demonic things, but still was an angel. And you can see that aspect of him at times.
You know, it's funny because, I mean, yes, he's a demon, but to me, he's a really good example of a fallen angel.
Yes. He's a demon because he broke the rules, but he broke them for good reason.
Yeah.
And in the quote-unquote right ways, obviously, he got punished and whatnot. But I loved the bit when we got the episode with Job, and he turns two of the kids into lizards or whatever, and the third's like, can I do it? Can I do it? He's like, you haven't bothered me yet, kind of a thing.
But I want to be a blue one.
Yeah. And it was very much, you bother me, I'm going to do it. But he's not cruel.
Yeah. Well, and then he does turn her into a blue one when he realizes she just wants to get to be a blue one.
Yeah. Yeah. At that point, he liked her and it's like, okay. And I loved how when Job gets his new kids.
Yes.
That scene really played up the way the angels, and to a large degree the demons as well, are in this reality of they're not of the earthly realm. So from our perspective, they're kind of naive and kind of stupid.
Yes.
In our ways, at the very least.
Yes.
So when Gabriel's like, yes, I've seen childbirth. I was there when Eve was born.
Yes.
And they're like, oh, we can sell it this way.
Yeah.
Grab the ribs, poof, the new kids are back. They look just like the old ones because he unturned them from lizards back in. And stuff. And there was the bit with Aziraphale having to basically, yep, these are the new kids.
Yeah.
You know, I give you my word as an angel. And it's kind of the slippery slope Aziraphale, I was going to say is on, but I'm going to go with could be on, because he's compromising but doing the right thing.
Yes.
I mean, there are times where, an ethical point of view, what he's doing is categorically wrong from one perspective. And categorically right from another.
Well, and in the case of Job's kids, he could rationalize a truth to his statement of these are your new kids. Because what they've been through in the last 24 hours.
Has changed them, yes. Well, Aziraphale is the king of kind of the justification or self-justification and seeing the quote-unquote errors of his ways.
Yeah.
And the self-rationalization, actually, is the right word to use.
There you go.
And it's funny because, again, Crowley is the flip side of that. He's not trying to self-rationalize anything. He's seeing, I don't say the truth of the matter, but his line at the end of, the people of Earth are just as dead, whether it's heaven that kills them or hell that kills them.
Yes. Yes, his eyes were opened to painful realities, and he could not stop seeing them.
Yeah. And that's the crux of that character.
The grave robbing episode really foreshadowed that. Because whether you are robbing a grave and selling that body to be the cadaver that's studied.
Or it's one that you know.
Yes.
Yeah. There were a lot of things in that episode. And, you know, Aziraphale, this is wrong. Oh, but it's going to help people down the line. This is right, you know.
Yeah.
And anyone who takes ethics as a there is a right and a wrong, I think has got a potentially simplified view of life. Because, again, you can couch the conversation in so many different ways for any particular thing. and spin as to, well, is that the right thing to do? Or are you just, you know, forcing somebody to prolonged suffering, or are you putting them out of their misery? You know, it's half a dozen ways to do it, depending on the situation. So there is no, I mean, there are certain things, there are universal truths to. Ethics is not one of them. Situational. And again, Crowley being seen as the demonic evil one, but he's doing things just as kind and helpful as Aziraphale. And the difference is, Aziraphale would feel horrible about trying to do some of those things. It's against the rules, or it's the wrong thing to do, or...
Well, we see Crowley save the lives of the humans who are attending the meeting of the Shopkeepers Association.
Mm-hmm.
He uses a stalling technique as well as negotiating the release.
Mm-hmm.
So as much as he's saying at times that, you know, I'm just going to kick back and relax, he's the one who first knows the danger, etc.
Well, and also when they perform as a team, the joint miracle.
That was hilarious. I'm going to do half a miracle. You're going to do half a miracle. My half a miracle will hide things from your side. Your half of the miracle will hide things from my side.
Yep.
And we won't set off alarms on either side.
Now, they set off alarms in heaven because apparently they consider a miracle at a lower bar than what hell does.
Well, I think actually what set off the alarms was because there was a third person involved, and when they held that person's hands, because that's the person they were hiding, they didn't realize that person still had, for lack of a better term, magic in them.
Oh, his...
His power. Albeit
low-ranked power was enough to tip the scale.
Yes.
That's fair. That's fair. I hadn't read it that way, but I can see that. They had a number of people in different roles, some more prominent roles than others. All of them, I think, did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the set design, the use of special effects. I mean, when Crowley or anyone is in his car, and particularly when you're looking through the windshield at him, it's blatantly, he's not really driving. This is the fake background and stuff. But he's also driving almost like a cartoon character would drive a car.
I love the zooming around town. I love the moments when I want to scream, pick a lane.
Well, when he's literally diving in and around buses and so forth.
Yes, yes.
Like a maniac. It's funny because it's blatantly CG effects, but not in the way of... like the video gamey CG effects that we'll often see in like a DC film or something like that. There is an artfulness to it and almost literally an artistry to it because it feels almost a little bit more like, I want to say like an oil painting kind of effect of it.
Now, at one point when Aziraphale was driving through the countryside, at first I'm sitting there going, why are we going heavy on the effects instead of showing what I expect the actual countryside to look like? And then we get the Loch Ness Monster in the background. And I'm like, oh, okay. They wanted to kind of prep our minds for, we're not showing you reality. So when they went full scale, not reality, our minds were already in that mode.
I loved, though, how he had turned Crowley's car bright yellow.
Yes, yes.
And Crowley's calling, it's like, I could tell you've done this.
Yes, yes.
But then when we get back outside the car, it's still turning back to black.
And the hubcaps were the last thing to change. Yeah.
They did a really good job with all of that. And I also enjoy how, like, with the opening credits, we've got almost a Monty Python-esque sequence of kind of quasi-animated images and stuff of the parade walking through. And at first, it's like, okay, they're doing stuff. I know this is going to tie into the story, but I don't know how. And then later, it's like, okay, I recognize this from the grave-robbing episode. This from this other episode.
Here's the coffee shop.
Yeah. Well, and not just here, the coffee shop, but the key places and scenes. And it's in many cases along the timeline of the events.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen the same sort of thing in, I think it was His Dark Material, maybe?
Yes.
Where the opening credits is a series of images. I mean, they did a similar thing in Star Trek Discovery and one or two other shows, where they seem like cryptic images, but once you start to recognize, or once you've experienced more of the story, you start to see what they've drawn from.
Yeah.
And I like it when they're able to do that, because that means they've at least produced enough of the show to be able to pull those things or know where they're going. And if you've laid out the trajectory of the story, it gives you the opportunity to say, to land this ending, I may need to tweak something at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very different than, I want to say it was Harlan Ellison, who at one point did as almost a showpiece, was sitting, I think, in the window of a bookstore, typing away a story. As he was finishing a page, it was getting taped up on the window.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Kind of the, I'm writing this page by page, you're getting it fresh off the typewriter.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a value in being able to do that. But as a consumer,
mm-hmm.
I like the premeditated storytelling where they've got the chance to sit and ruminate on the, here's the story we're telling, we've told. Does it need an editing pass? Do we need to punch something up a little here or there? Did we make a mistake? Do we need to revector?
Mm-hmm.
And there's some of that you can do in the writing on the computer or typewriter stage. There's other stuff that once you start to see how the actors are doing it, what the sets look like or whatever, you can determine, did that performance really convey what it needed to? Mm-hmm. Did it not? Do we need to add a little voiceover? Do we need to change something here? Is this actor putting a different spin on it than we had anticipated?
Yeah.
And Michael Sheen, with his portrayal of Aziraphale, did such an amazing job
mm-hmm.
throughout. And there are a couple of scenes where you can just see he's either getting the feedback he wanted or feels like he's getting the feedback he wanted, whether Crowley's really giving it to him or not.
Yeah.
That he's just kind of lighting up inside, you know, it's like, oh, yes, they're so happy.
I liked his first scenes with Jim.
Yes. The trepidation.
The struggle.
The what's going on. And it's, I don't want anything to do with you, but I must help you because that's who I am sort of a thing. Yeah.
I feel the need to help you, but I also know this could hurt me. And yet I can't turn my back on you.
The actor's ability for those sorts of things to play across his face.
Yeah.
And his ability to have that almost stuffy Felix from The Odd Couple kind of, you know, uptight mannerisms and stuff, and at times relax, at other times you can see, and we saw some of this particularly there at the end, the shift in the body language of he's going one way, nope, nope, he's stealing himself up, he's going to go this other way,
mm-hmm.
but he almost went, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it's just
well
great.
And for me, that final moment where he has the second thoughts, but then he goes, I really think in his mind, he went back to the conversation he'd had with Crowley of, but I can make a difference.
Yes, yes. And again, we don't know that for certain, but the way he played that moment out,
yeah,
it feels like, how could it be any other way?
Yeah.
The style of the two actors is a bit different because it feels like Sheen is kind of playing more the inner
mm-hmm.
part of the character expressing out,
mm-hmm.
whereas it feels like at times Tennant is doing the, I'm just going to flop down on this chair, and the outer part goes in.
And you know, the funny thing is, the moment you started to say that, the scene that came to mind for me was when he's on the park bench very early in the season, and somebody sits down next to him.
Somebody sits down, clearly is doing a spy call and response thing, not getting the response, so doing the call again. And he's like, you're on the wrong bench.
And tells him where the person he wants is. You know, the section chief for whatever country is over there. And the guy just kind of looks at him like, wait, you know who I want and who this call and response is. This, oh, okay, bye.
It's like, this is not the first time this has happened.
Yes.
It's been long enough since we've seen the first episode. I'm trying to think if they did something similar-ish there.
I think they might have done it for season. Because we saw something
at one of the benches. That, or I'm blurring it with another show, which is equally likely. I mean, in six episodes, I mean, this is only, I want to say, about 5.5 hours of content. Because I don't think any episode was longer than an hour, or as long as an hour.
Yeah.
They cover a ton of ground.
They make good use of the characters they bring in. And by that, I'm specifically thinking of Molly and Nina.
Yes.
Who could have felt like they had a throwaway subplot, and it managed to feed in to the main plot in multiple ways.
It fed into the main plot, but the payoff of that relationship with kind of their final scene in the bookstore.
Yeah.
and how that spun that final bit of the narrative.
Yeah.
And because it ends on a note where, sure, they could finish here, but it really feels like they want a third season. And they're getting a third season. Yeah. Which is awesome. It'll be fun, particularly what they teased.
Well, and what I'm seeing says a third and final season.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
I can see that because what they teased as kind of the hook for the next season would be a little bit of a tough act to follow.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends how far down that path they've got a vector. It's just depending the specific direction they go in on that. So, but again, they cover a lot of ground. We get great character moments. The story never seems to flounder. And I feel this year, this season was a very strong one. I don't recall feeling quite as strongly about that first season, because I think there might have been one or two things that meandered just a little. But it's been 3 years. I don't remember.
Yeah, it's been a while. I just remember being so intrigued by the relationship between the two leads.
Well, and what I appreciated is they started the season with practically the dawn of time.
Yeah.
Where Crowley almost seems to kick off the Big Bang.
Yeah.
Or may literally have. But we see the start of their relationship, and even all just in this season, we see it how it has progressed and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't just take it for granted that we have memorized the first season.
Yeah.
We know all of that, and let's go. They reintroduce characters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, given 3 years between seasons, absolutely appreciated. But even if it had just been a year, I think it's a good idea.
Yes.
It allows people to get into a story without having to go all the way back to the beginning. Okay, 12 episodes across two seasons, that's not that big of an ask. But there are other franchises. The Marvel Cinematic Universe is a great example of this.
Mm-hmm.
That would be daunting to go do.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember some people who didn't want to go see one of the Star Wars films because they hadn't seen all the ones before it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, this is supposed to be kind of a standalone. So, you know, go figure. But if writing accessible stories, I think, is always a good idea.
Yeah.
And they did a good job on that this season.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think if there are any other big aspects we haven't touched on already. It took a while for them to really explain the overarching plot. And kind of, there was a lot at the final episode of almost the parlor scene of the butler did it.
Yeah.
But it played out well. It was fun. Answered all the questions I really had. And it landed that ending, and mm-hmm. it didn't feel like, oh, crap, that's what you were trying to do?
Yeah.
You know, because I've had some where we're watching something and the big mystery is what the hell's happening. I never felt that way here. But there were a few of, okay, this is how you started things off. You've got to explain that.
Mm-hmm.
And, yep, okay, you did.
Yeah.
So did they retcon or not? And I don't really feel they did. They just withheld information until the end.
Yeah.
Which you kind of have to do in some cases. So I, again, thought this was a ton of fun. I hope it's not a 3-year wait to the next season.
Oh, me too.
And I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with it.
Yeah, because I really like the characters. The way they set up for next season, I feel like the characters will at least start the season in separate places.
Absolutely.
And then the question is, how much will we get Crowley and Aziraphale together? Which is why I feel they're at their strongest.
Aziraphale has the start of a mandate for his direction to go. My expectation, 6 episodes. The first one, they're pretty much separate. Crowley's doing what Crowley is doing. Aziraphale is starting on this mandate he's been given, gets it fully started and out there into the world, and then he gets towards the end of that episode and he's realizing, this is not going to go well.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second episode would be mending fences with Crowley. And the other 4 is, what the hell are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
Now, whether they go that way or not, I have no idea. But that's kind of the feeling I get. And then it's a question of, if it's the final season, how do you land that ending and feel like, okay, we're at a point where close the curtain, we're done.
Yeah.
One comment on curtain.
Yeah.
Did you notice the license plate of Crowley's car?
I have a feeling it was something spelled backwards.
Curtain.
Oh, that's funny.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
But I spent half the season just, what the hell? And then finally I'm reading it backwards. Like, oh.
That's so funny.
Kind of funny.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode,
Please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, forum, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayall. And thanks again for listening.